Science and Health, Chapter 8, Footsteps of Truth. Remember, Lord, the reproach of thy servants, how I do bear in my bosom the reproach of all the mighty people, wherewith thine enemies have reproached, O Lord, wherewith they have reproached the footsteps of thine anointed. Psalms. The best sermon ever preached is truth practiced and demonstrated by the destruction of sin, sickness, and death. Knowing this, and knowing too that one affection would be supreme in us and take the lead in our lives, Jesus said, "No man can serve two masters." We cannot build safely on false foundations. Truth makes a new creature, in whom old things pass away and all things are become new. Passions, selfishness, false appetites, hatred, fear, all sensuality yield to spirituality, and the superabundance of being is on the side of God good. We cannot fill vessels already full. They must first be emptied. Let us disrobe error. Then when the winds of God blow, we shall not hug our tatters close about us. The way to extract error from mortal mind is to pour in truth through flood tides of love. Christian perfection is won on no other basis. Grafting holiness upon unholiness, supposing that sin can be forgiven when it is not forsaken, is as foolish as straining out gnats and swallowing camels. The scientific unity which exists between God and man must be wrought out in life practice, and God's will must be universally done. If men would bring to bear upon the study of the science of mind half the faith they bestow upon the so-called pains and pleasures of material sense, they would not go on from bad to worse until disciplined by the prison and the scaffold, but the whole human family would be redeemed through the merits of Christ, through the perception and acceptance of truth. For this glorious result, Christian Science lights the torch of spiritual understanding. Outside of this science, all is mutable. But immortal man, in accord with the divine principle of his being, God, neither sins, suffers, nor dies. The days of our pilgrimage will multiply instead of diminish when God's kingdom comes on earth, for the true way leads to life instead of to death, and earthly experience discloses the finity of error and the infinite capacities of truth, in which God gives man dominion over all the earth. Our beliefs about a supreme being contradict the practice growing out of them. Error abounds where truth should much more abound. We admit that God has almighty power, is a very present help in trouble, and yet we rely on a drug or hypnotism to heal disease, as if senseless matter or erring mortal mind had more power than omnipotent spirit. Common opinion admits that a man may take cold in the act of doing good, and that this cold may produce fatal pulmonary disease, as though evil could overbear the law of love and check the reward for doing good. In the science of Christianity, mind, omnipotence, has all power, assigns sure rewards to righteousness, and shows that matter can neither heal nor make sick, create nor destroy. If God were understood instead of being merely believed, this understanding would establish health. The accusations of the rabbis, he made himself the Son of God, was really the justification of Jesus, for to the Christian the only true spirit is godlike. This thought incites to a more exalted worship and self-abnegation. Spiritual perception brings out the possibilities of being, destroys reliance on aught but God, and so makes man the image of his Maker, in deed and in truth. We are prone to believe either in more than one supreme ruler or in some power less than God. We imagine that mind can be imprisoned in a sensuous body. When the material body has gone to ruin, when evil has overtaxed the belief of life in matter and destroyed it, then mortals believe that the deathless principle or soul escapes from matter and lives on. But this is not true. Death is not a stepping stone to life, immortality, and bliss. The so-called sinner is a suicide. Sin kills the sinner and will continue to kill him so long as he sins. The foam and fury of illegitimate living and of fearful and doleful dying should disappear on the shore of time. Then the waves of sin, sorrow, and death beat in vain. God, divine good, does not kill a man in order to give him eternal life, for God alone is man's life. God is at once the center and circumference of being. It is evil that dies. Good dies not. All forms of error support the false conclusions that there is more than one life, that material history is as real and living as spiritual history, that mortal error is as conclusively mental as immortal truth, and that there are two separate antagonistic entities and beings, two powers, namely spirit and matter, resulting in a third person, mortal man, who carries out the delusions of sin, sickness, and death. The first power is admitted to be good, an intelligence or mind called God. The so-called second power, evil, is the unlikeness of good. It cannot therefore be mind, though so called. The third power, mortal man, is a supposed mixture of the first and second antagonistic powers, intelligence and non-intelligence, of spirit and matter. Such theories are evidently erroneous. They can never stand the test of science. Judging them by their fruits, they are corrupt. When will the ages understand the ego and realize only one God, one mind, or intelligence? False and self-assertive theories have given sinners the notion that they can create what God cannot, namely sinful mortals in God's image, thus usurping the name without the nature of the image or reflection of divine mind. But in science, it can never be said that man has a mind of his own, distinct from God, the all-mind. The belief that God lives in matter is pantheistic. The error which says that soul is in body, mind is in matter, and good is in evil, must unsay it and cease from such utterances. Else God will continue to be hidden from humanity, and mortals will sin without knowing that they are sinning, will lean on matter instead of spirit, stumble with lameness, drop with drunkenness, consume with disease, all because of their blindness, their false sense concerning God and man. When Well, the error of believing that there is life in matter and that sin, sickness, and death are creations of God be unmasked. When will it be understood that matter has neither intelligence, life, nor sensation, and that the opposite belief is the prolific source of all suffering? God created all through mind and made all perfect and eternal. Where then is the necessity for recreation or procreation? Befogged in error, the error of believing that matter can be intelligent for good or evil, we can catch clear glimpses of God only as the mists disperse or as they melt into such thinness that we perceive the divine image in some word or deed, which indicates the true idea, the supremacy and reality of good, the nothingness and unreality of evil. When we realize that there is one mind, the divine law of loving our neighbor as ourselves is unfolded. Whereas a belief in many ruling minds hinders man's normal drift towards the one mind, one God, and leads human thought into opposite channels where selfishness reigns. Selfishness tips the beam of human existence towards the side of error, not towards truth. Denial of the oneness of mind throws our weight into the scale not of spirit, God, good, but of matter. When we fully understand our relation to the divine, we can have no other mind but His, no other love, wisdom, or truth, no other sense of life, and no consciousness of the existence of matter or error. The power of the human will should be exercised only in subordination to truth, else it will misguide the judgment and free the lower propensities. It is the province of spiritual sense to govern man. Material erring human thought acts injuriously both upon the body and through it. Will power is capable of all evil. It can never heal the sick, for it is the prayer of the unrighteous, while the exercise of the sentiments, hope, faith, love, is the prayer of the righteous. This prayer, governed by science instead of the senses, heals the sick. In the scientific relation of God to man, we find that whatever blesses one blesses all, as Jesus showed with the loaves and the fishes. Spirit, not matter, being the source of supply. Does God send sickness, giving the mother her child for the brief space of a few years, and then taking it away by death? Is God creating anew what He has already created? The scriptures are definite on this point, declaring that His work was finished. Nothing is new to God, and that it was good. Can there be any birth or death for man, the spiritual image and likeness of God? Instead of God sending sickness and death, He destroys them and brings to light immortality. Omnipotent, an infinite mind made all and includes all. This mind does not make mistakes and subsequently correct them. God does not cause man to sin, to be sick, or to die. There are evil beliefs, often called evil spirits, but these evils are not spirit, for there is no evil in spirit. Because God is spirit, evil becomes more apparent and obnoxious proportionately as we advance spiritually, until it disappears from our lives. This fact proves our position, for every scientific statement in Christianity has its proof. Error of statement leads to error in action. God is not the creator of an evil mind. Indeed, evil is not mind. We must learn that evil is the awful deception and unreality of existence. Evil is not supreme. Good is not helpless. Nor are the so-called laws of matter primary and the law of spirit secondary. Without this lesson, we lose sight of the perfect Father or the divine principle of man. Body is not first and soul last, nor is evil mightier than good. The science of being repudiates self-evident impossibilities, such as the amalgamation of truth and error in cause or effect. Science separates the tares and wheat in time of harvest. There is but one primal cause. Therefore, there can be no effect from any other cause, and there can be no reality in aught which does not proceed from this great and only cause. Sin, sickness, disease, and death belong not to the science of being. They are the errors which presuppose the absence of truth, life, or love. The spiritual reality is the scientific fact in all things. The spiritual fact, repeated in the action of man and the whole universe, is harmonious and is the ideal of truth. Spiritual facts are not inverted. The opposite discord, which bears no resemblance to spirituality, is not real. The only evidence of this inversion is obtained from suppositional error, which affords no proof of God, Spirit, or of the spiritual creation. Material sense defines all things materially and has a finite sense of the infinite. The scriptures say, "In him we live and move and have our being." What then is the seeming power, independent of God, which causes disease and cures it? What is it but an error of belief, a law of mortal mind, wrong in every sense, embracing sin, sickness, and death? It is the very antipode of immortal mind, of truth, and of spiritual law. It is not in accordance with the goodness of God's character that he should make man sick, then leave man to heal himself. It is absurd to suppose that matter can both cause and cure disease, or that spirit, God, produces disease and leaves the remedy to matter. John Young of Edinburgh writes, "God is the father of mind and of nothing else." Such an utterance is the voice of one crying in the wilderness of human beliefs and preparing the way of science. Let us learn of the real and eternal, and prepare for the reign of Spirit, the kingdom of heaven, the reign and rule of universal harmony, which cannot be lost nor remain forever unseen. Mind, not matter, is causation. A material body only expresses a material and mortal mind. A mortal man possesses this body, and he makes it harmonious or discordant according to the images of thought impressed upon it. You embrace your body in your thought, and you should delineate upon it thoughts of health, not of sickness. You should banish all thoughts of disease and sin and of other beliefs included in matter. man, being immortal, has a perfect, indestructible life. It is the mortal belief which makes the body discordant and diseased in proportion as ignorance, fear, or human will governs mortals. Mind, supreme over all its formations and governing them all, is the central sun of its own systems of ideas, the life and light of all its own vast creation, and man is tributary to divine mind. The material and mortal body or mind is not the man. The world would collapse without mind, without the intelligence which holds the winds in its grasp. Neither philosophy nor skepticism can hinder the march of the science which reveals the supremacy of mind. The immanent sense of mind power enhances the glory of mind. Nearness, not distance, lends enchantment to this view. The compounded minerals or aggregated substances composing the earth, the relations which constituent masses hold to each other, the magnitudes, distances, and revolutions of the celestial bodies are of no real importance when we remember that they all must give place to the spiritual fact by the translation of man and the universe back into spirit. In proportion as this is done, man and the universe will be found harmonious and eternal. Material substances or mundane formations, astronomical calculations, and all the paraphernalia of speculative theories based on the hypothesis of material law or life and intelligence resident in matter will ultimately vanish, swallowed up in the infinite calculus of spirit. Spiritual sense is a conscious, constant capacity to understand God. It shows the superiority of faith by works over faith in words. Its ideas are expressed only in new tongues, and these are interpreted by the translation of the spiritual original into the language which human thought can comprehend. The principle and proof of Christianity are discerned by spiritual sense. They are set forth in Jesus' demonstrations, which show, by his healing the sick, casting out evils, and destroying death, the last enemy that shall be destroyed, his disregard of matter and its so-called laws. Knowing that soul and its attributes were forever manifested through man, the Master healed the sick, gave sight to the blind, hearing to the deaf, feet to the lame, thus bringing to light the scientific action of the divine mind on human minds and bodies, and giving a better understanding of soul and salvation. Jesus healed sickness and sin by one and the same metaphysical process. The expression mortal mind is really a solecism, for mind is immortal, and truth pierces the error of mortality as a sunbeam penetrates the cloud. Because in obedience to the immutable law of spirit, this so-called mind is self-destructive, I name it mortal. Error soweth the wind and reapeth the whirlwind. What is termed matter, being unintelligent, cannot say, I suffer, I die, I am sick, or I am well. It is the so-called mortal mind which voices this and appears to itself to make good its claim. To mortal sense, sin and suffering are real, but immortal sense includes no evil nor pestilence. Because immortal sense has no error of sense, it has no sense of error. Therefore, it is without a destructive element. If brain, nerves, stomach are intelligent, if they talk to us, tell us their condition and report how they feel, then spirit and matter, truth and error commingle and produce sickness and health, good and evil, life and death, and who shall say whether truth or error is the greater? The sensations of the body must either be the sensations of a so-called mortal mind or of matter. Nerves are not mind. Is it not provable that mind is not mortal and that matter has no sensation? Is it not equally true that matter does not appear in the spiritual understanding of being? The sensation of sickness and the impulse to sin seem to obtain in mortal mind. When a tear starts, does not the so-called mind produce the effect seen in the lacrimal gland? Without mortal mind, the tear could not appear, and this action shows the nature of all so-called material cause and effect. It should no longer be said in Israel that the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. Sympathy with error should disappear. The transfer of the thoughts of one erring mind to another, science renders impossible. If it is true that nerves have sensation, that matter has intelligence, that the material organism causes the eyes to see and the ears to hear, then when the body is dematerialized, these faculties must be lost. For their immortality is not in spirit. Whereas the fact is that only through dematerialization and spiritualization of thought can these faculties be conceived of as immortal. Nerves are not the source of pain or pleasure. We suffer or enjoy in our dreams, but this pain or pleasure is not communicated through a nerve. A tooth which has been extracted sometimes aches again in belief, and the pain seems to be in its old place. A limb which has been amputated has continued in belief to pain the owner. If the sensation of pain in the limb can return, can be prolonged, why cannot the limb reappear? Why need pain rather than pleasure come to this mortal sense? Because the memory of pain is more vivid than the memory of pleasure. I have seen an unwitting attempt to scratch the end of a finger which had been cut off for months. When the nerve is gone, which we say was the occasion of pain, and the pain still remains, it proves sensation to be in the mortal mind, not in matter. Reverse the process. Take away the so-called mind instead of a piece of the flesh, and the nerves have no sensation. Mortals have a modus of their own, undirected and unsustained by God. They produce a rose through seed and soil, and bring the rose into contact with the olfactory nerves that they may smell it. In legerdemain and credulous frenzy, mortals believe that unseen spirits produce the flowers. God alone makes and clothes the lilies of the field, and this he does by means of mind, not matter. Because all the methods of mind are not understood, we say the lips or hands must move in order to convey thought, that the undulations of the air convey sound, and possibly that other methods involve so-called miracles. The realities of being, its normal action, and the origin of all things are unseen to mortal sense, whereas the unreal and imitative movements of mortal belief, which would reverse the immortal modus and action, are styled the real. Whoever contradicts this mortal mind supposition of reality is called a deceiver, or is said to be deceived. Of a man it has been said, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Hence, as a man spiritually understandeth, so is he in truth. Mortal mind conceives of something as either liquid or solid, and then classifies it materially. Immortal and spiritual facts exist apart from this mortal and material conception. God, good, is self-existent and self-expressed, though indefinable as a whole. Every step towards goodness is a departure from materiality and is a tendency towards God, Spirit. Material theories partially paralyze this attraction towards infinite and eternal good by an opposite attraction towards the finite, temporary, and discordant. Sound is a mental impression made on mortal belief. The ear does not really hear. Divine science reveals sound as communicated through the senses of soul, through spiritual understanding. Mozart experienced more than he expressed. The rapture of his grandest symphonies was never heard. He was a musician beyond what the world knew. This was even more strikingly true of Beethoven, who was so long hopelessly deaf. Mental melodies and strains of sweetest music supersede conscious sound. Music is the rhythm of head and heart. Mortal mind is the harp of many strings, discoursing either discord or harmony, according as the hand which sweeps over it is human or divine. Before human knowledge dipped to its depths into a false sense of things, into belief in material origins which discard the one mind and true source of being, it is possible that the impressions from truth were as distinct as sound, and that they came as sound to the primitive prophets. If the medium of hearing is wholly spiritual, it is normal and indestructible. If Enoch's perception had been confined to the evidence before his material senses, he could never have walked with God, nor been guided into the demonstration of life eternal. Adam, represented in the scriptures as formed from dust, is an object lesson for the human mind. The material senses, like Adam, originate in matter and return to dust, are proved non-intelligent. They go out as they came in, for they are still the error, not the truth of being. When it is learned that the spiritual sense and not the material conveys the impressions of mind to man, then being will be understood and found to be harmonious. We bow down to matter and entertain finite thoughts of God like the pagan idolater. Mortals are inclined to fear and to obey what they consider a material body more than they do a spiritual God. All material knowledge, like the original tree of knowledge, multiplies their pains, for mortal illusions would rob God, slay man, and meanwhile would spread their table with cannibal tidbits and give thanks. How transient a sense is mortal sight, when a wound on the retina may end the power of light and lens. But the real sight or sense is not lost. Neither age nor accident can interfere with the senses of soul, and there are no other real senses. It is evident that the body as matter has no sensation of its own, and there is no oblivion for soul and its faculties. Spirit senses are without pain, and they are forever at peace. Nothing can hide from them the harmony of all things and the might and permanence of truth. If spirit, soul, could sin or be lost, then being and immortality would be lost, together with all the faculties of mind. But being cannot be lost while God exists. Soul and matter are at variance from the very necessity of their opposite natures. Mortals are unacquainted with the reality of existence because matter and mortality do not reflect the facts of spirit. Spiritual vision is not subordinate to geometric altitudes. Whatever is governed by God is never for an instant deprived of the light and might of intelligence and life. We are sometimes led to believe that darkness is as real as light, but science affirms darkness to be only a mortal sense of the absence of light, at the coming of which darkness loses the appearance of reality. So sin and sorrow, disease and death, are the suppositional absence of life, God, and flee as phantoms of error before truth and love. With its divine proof, science reverses the evidence of material sense. Every quality and condition of mortality is lost, swallowed up in immortality. Mortal man is the antipode of immortal man in origin, in existence, and in his relation to God. Because he understood the superiority and immortality of good, Socrates feared not the hemlock poison. Even the faith of his philosophy spurned physical timidity. Having sought man's spiritual state, he recognized the immortality of man. The ignorance and malice of the age would have killed the venerable philosopher because of his faith in soul and his indifference to the body. Who shall say that man is alive today, but may be dead tomorrow? What has touched life, God, to such strange issues? Here theories cease, and science unveils the mystery and solves the problem of man. Error bites the heel of truth, but cannot kill truth. Truth bruises the head of error, destroys error. Spirituality lays open siege to materialism. On which side are we fighting?